All right. On this episode, we're talking local gardening. Welcome back to another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. As we go out once again and explore our culinary world of the Comox Valley and Vancouver Island. I am Chef Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm Darren Howlett. And tonight we're sitting down with Miss Toni Dunn. we're going to talk gardening. Welcome, Toni.
Thanks.
Thank you for coming in, and thank you for bringing this beautiful zucchini.
Yeah, it's like a zucchini that ate another zucchini. I can take no credit for growing. It's like the season of acquiring other people's zucchinis. Yeah. I don't plant zucchini anymore because
yeah. Everyone yeah, grows zucchini.
The garden has valuable real estate, and
it
you
is.
Can always acquire zucchinis. And
yeah.
This is it's the centerpiece of that reality.
Just sort of backtracking a bit, I think that it's probably been, I think it was right around last summer that I was germinating the idea of having you come onto the show. But at the time, I think it was more, I was like, how do I get Tori on the show? Tori being my brother, being Tony's other half. And I realized that Tori just isn't the kind of person that would want to sit down and talk about it. But then it was when we were talking the other day, I was like, oh, this is how this works. Toni needs to come on the show. Toni's the one that's got her hands in there, and she's the talker, and she's got
I'm the all front of man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And your garden, I mean, you know, family aside, your garden has blown me away this last summer and this summer. And I knew that we just had to talk to you because a lot of people have asked us, you know, about gardening and mm-hmm. if we're going to touch on that. So, yeah, I mean, maybe you want to touch on basics. How did your garden become such a wealth of everything?
Yeah, thanks.
Other than zucchini.
Everything but zucchini. By accident would be my, like, really umbrella answer. I grew up in the suburbs.
Right.
And my parents, we had a garden, but it was, like, not, we weren't homesteading. It was kind of like this, like, kind of a... like novelty in
right.
the yard because mm-hmm. you know, like people had gardens, but it wasn't really something that my parents were super passionate about. But it's all adult skills. It's all
right.
things that I've learned as an adult. And I started with this little, I had a, my boyfriend at the time and I, we had this like little frame of a, someone had got this like old pool table at a garage sale. And we just took the frame of the pool table.
Oh, wow.
And just dug up the earth.
Yeah.
Which happened to be the best soil I've ever worked with.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Because it was like old agricultural land in Victoria that had been built on and no one had grown a garden there in like 20 years or something.
Oh, wow.
At least. So I had this really like luck of the draw first gardening season. I was like, I am so good at this. And I had this like really prolific little box of a garden. And then like probably, you know, I had a garden for many years after that, which was never as good.
Right.
And I started to be more interested in like soil alchemy and being like, it's obviously like soil is what we're talking about
right.
here. It's not just throwing seeds in the ground, although that works sometimes. And so it was just like trial and error over many, many, many years. And I would say that I probably haven't had such a prolific garden until the last couple of years because I've actually been in the same place. I think since I moved to the Comox Valley, I've like started and left like six gardens.
Right, yeah.
I start gardens for other people and then I'm like, see ya! And right at harvest time, it's really challenging, but it's, I feel like it's also like this beautiful practice of non-attachment. And I was talking about a friend with it this week and we were talking about how yoga, and I teach yoga as well, how yoga and gardening can be like so... similar lessons or kind
right.
of similar teachings come out of the practice of both of those things. It's like this idea of, you know, we invest our energy and we invest our time, but we really, there's no certainty
right.
in what comes out of that. Cause there's so
right.
like life, you know, the weather, whatever, there's so much uncertainty.
That's
and,
right.
So yeah, I just started growing food for fun. And then after a while, I was like, oh, okay, like, I think I might be getting the hang of this.
Right.
And, of course, that changes every year, depending on the year. But then I started having surplus, basically,
right.
where I was like, oh, my God, like, I can't possibly eat this much lettuce. Or, like, mm-hmm. kind of
yeah.
just taking some bigger steps and being like, okay, I'm going to plant this giant, like, patch of beets. And being like, oh, my God, what do you do,
yeah, what do, you
with,
do with,
like, 100 beets?
Yeah.
And so I feel like most good ideas are, in the food world at least, are kind of, like, birthed out of abundance or right. of surplus, right? I think probably every good recipe in the French cooking era is like all from like, oh my God, what do you do with this much stuff?
What are we going to do with all this dairy?
What are we going to do with all this stuff? So I started feeding it to people.
Yeah.
And it started with yoga students,
right.
well, my friends and family, but then yoga students, I started doing yoga retreats.
Right. I was going to say, I remember the last couple of years you've done retreats where not only is it a day of yoga, but it's also a day of food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love exposing people to that. That's kind of my, I'm highly enthusiastic, as you both know. And I think I have that capability of like getting other people stoked. And I love getting people stoked on food, which is why I'm still in this food service industry at 35.
Yeah, right.
Despite my best efforts to come and go. But I feel like people, it's such an empowering thing to see something go from a little seed to a plant. I mean, I see it with children all the time. You see the amazement in children when they see that happen. But I see it in adults because we don't all have that skill set. And I certainly didn't until I was an adult. And being able to see something go from a little seed to a plant to this giant harvestable thing to this delightfully delicious
Well, piece of art on a plate. Even I feel like, you know, I've grown up in the food industry and I'm not easily stunned either. And then your garden... I think what shocked me was I had never seen, I don't know if you could call your garden organic legally, but I'm sure you could because I know what's gone into your garden. And so to me, that was the thing. It was seeing how fast and how amazing and how abundant it was without any sort of shortcuts. Mm-hmm. It was just all natural. Like I hadn't seen that kind of abundance out of a backyard garden ever. So.
Well, ironically, well, sadly and ironically, these last two winters, we haven't had much of a snowboard season.
Right.
And so I've devoted a lot of my snowboarding energy into soil alchemy energy, which has meant heading to the beach, actually, and collecting seaweed and other, like, I've kind of become like a vulture. I don't know if that's a thing, but I'm like, I'll drive around, I'll see this kind of like really awesome decomposed pile of leaves, and I'm like, I'm gonna come back here with a bin. And it's like a little bit obsessive, you know. I catch myself sometimes just in these weird places, like I have bins in my car and gloves in my car, and I'm just like collecting. But I feel like that feeding the soil part of it is a component that I'm only just starting to get the hang of.
Yeah.
And I'm not like, of course I'm not trained at all. I just am kind of an information junkie and I love to research these things. And a lot of my research is just like oral tradition research, like just talking to a lot of like amazing elderly women that come to my yoga classes. I shouldn't call them elderly because they're not elderly.
Right.
Sorry.
But they're sage. They're sage. They have wisdom.
Yeah. They're wise. Yeah. They're wise. They have, and that's, I mean, gardening, I think growing food, this experience and hearing what other people have to say.
Yeah. And like one of the things too that blew me away was just how often you return to the beach. Like I'd always heard, you know, oh yeah, get seaweed, it's great for the soil. But I, you know, you guys turn it into the soil, but then also as things are growing, I've seen some of the things you've made little beds of new seaweed around it to keep nourishing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then especially like at the end of the season, you're turning in more seaweed again just to keep it rich. And
yeah, Tori actually, my partner, he keeps all the like heads and guts and things from the fish, which is actually kind of gross in the freezer. It takes up all my berry space. But at the end of the season, we actually
turn all that in.
So the ocean, being so close to the ocean is a huge advantage, I think, to like feeding the soil just in terms of like minerals. Yeah. But especially right now with this crazy drought that we're having and mulching, and protecting that top layer of soil and seaweed is like so absorbent too, right? Like it's the things that are in my garden right now that aren't very well mulched are really suffering, and the things that I've like managed to get stuff around early on in the season are really doing well. So I mean, again, that's like I don't really even know that I understand the science of that, but it's working.
Yeah. No, and I mean, I think that's great. Like
a scientific observation.
Yeah. Yeah. And you definitely, just having watched what you're doing, I understand now that there's more to it than just soil and water and sunlight, you know, which they say, oh, that's the keys, but it's like, no, it's keeping the soil nitrogen rich. It's watching the alchemy. It's making sure that you're not losing all of that nutrient to just regular evaporation, you know, you're finding ways to keep it rooted in the soil. And and I'm blown away, but equally more, and I don't want to totally go away from gardening, absolutely inspired too by the way that, I mean, as people don't have that are they're listening, they're not watching, that you're almost 8 months pregnant.
Yep.
And I loved hearing the fact that you had all these alternative revenue streams, just, you know, and not even necessarily monetarily, just you've got this abundance in the garden and you're turning it into to provide
maternity
for you.
Leave.
Yeah. You're turning it into other yeah, right. And it's fantastic. I was blown away by that. That's when I was like, you have to be on the show. We got to talk about this.
Yeah. I'm good at turning lemons into lemonade and nasturtiums into pasta. I have, well, that started too kind of by accident because I was doing yoga retreats and a friend of mine was like, oh my God, like I want a basket from you every week. And kind of when things like that come at me, I'm usually kind of like, really? Like, I don't think I can do that.
And like a basket of foods.
Yeah. I'm like, do I have enough food? I don't really know. And cause I was only kind of thinking on the scale of like feeding my own household and storing up for winter.
Right.
And then I started recognizing like, oh God, yeah, there's like so much in my garden that goes to waste. Like there's so many things. Like I mean, you can only eat so much arugula before it all goes to seed. And it happens in like, you know, often like course of like 12 hours.
Yeah.
So I started recognizing like, okay. And I started moving it and yeah, it felt like a really great exchange to be able to give this friend of mine food, and she was so grateful, and she gave me money, and then I could spend that money at the farmer's market on all the missing pieces.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was just this kind of redistribution of wealth, and so that's how it started, but then this year I had, because I'm not doing yoga retreats this year, because I'm 8 months pregnant, I don't feel like having a clean house all the time and catering to 20 people every 2 weeks. I've been just doing baskets and people just come and pick them. But I have 4 customers and it's very casual. It's not necessarily weekly, but it's just kind of like I send out a text like, okay, Thursday looks like it'll be the day. And there'll be produce, but I'll also do a salad dressing every week and a pesto and a little bouquet of flowers or whatever is happening in the garden. And it's great because it motivates me to process things that I might not usually get on. Like, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm going to make a pesto. You can always make a pesto, but it's what am I going to use to make a pesto?
The other day, the other day I stopped in and you had like 9 jars of pesto. I was like, wow, what's going on here?
I'm a little bit like, I take after my grandmother. I think I have a Latvian grandmother who's like kind of like a food hoarder. Like she had this like really intense like pantry. Yeah. And my partner's a bit of a food hoarder too. Like we're always like, we have no food. And it's like, I think if there was no food, like people would be showing up at our doorstep like 3 weeks down the road and we would be feeding the community.
Right. Like, your version of no food is totally different. Kind of it's silly. Just like, yeah,
it's not relative to actually no food. So I'm really good at I love not wasting food. That's like my favorite thing. Where my partner, he'll go and like, you know, he'll come up with this elaborate dinner idea. Like, I'm going to make a Thai feast and he'll have to go out and buy absolutely every single thing for the feast. Whereas like, I'm like, we've got wilted broccoli, we've got dead potatoes and like, I'll make like a cream of fridge soup.
Yeah.
And it's delicious.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And
right.
It feels like this triumph because it's, you know, you've created something out of something that would have gone to waste. So not that I'm, people who I make baskets for are probably like, gross. I promise I use fresh ingredients in the pestos. It's kind of changed the way I look at the garden because I guess I'm like a farmer, like a training wheels farmer.
Right.
Like I'm kind of like, okay, like I'm actually producing for the, you know, and I've been giving a little bit of food to Atlas
as well.
Well,
that's been great for me. I've been getting these texts from you. I'm like, I've got arugula. And I'm like,
I gotta move this arugula.
Do you want it? What do you, and I'm like, it's arugula. I'll have 100 ideas that. Like,
Easily my favorite.
Worst comes to worst, I'll make pesto, but like just fresh arugula. I love wilting it and stuff.
So. Yeah. And it's so, I mean, it's so special too, to like work in the restaurant where I'm like, oh, did you like your salad? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, I grew that lettuce. Like smugly. And they're like, what? And I'm like, that's farm to table right there. And your farmer served it to you as well. So that's pretty...
You can't get any closer to that connection, right?
Yeah. Well, and the love in that is the community support, right? Because like the people who are buying these baskets aren't like strangers. They're my friends. And, you know, obviously you guys are buying it. But I think that's how it starts. And I have this kind of like romantic notion of what it would be like to be a farmer. And I kind of I kind of want to hold on to that.
Yeah.
You know, like I think down the road I probably, I'm going in that direction, but I don't. I think it would be really intense, and I think it is really intense for farmers to make a living just like going at it like as a business model. And so like a lot of the things that I've done in my life, like teaching yoga too. It was a very like, it was, I considered it a hobby for like 6 years before I called it a job. And I think that the same goes for being a quote unquote gardener, farmer, whatever you want to call it, food producer. I feel like, it's just these little like baby steps. That
See, you remind me quite a bit of my old neighbors. Which we've been on our show a few times.
Oh, Brian McCorn,
Brian and Leah, who are amazing. And they started out with just this little property and they put a greenhouse and they were growing so much food there. Like we were buying like bags of lettuce off them every day and tomatoes and they were feeding both our households out of this one greenhouse. And it was just amazing. But then they grew to that next level that they went out and they bought a farm. So
it's kind of addictive.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to keep it at this one level where you're like, you know, every year I'm like, maybe just a few more boxes, maybe just a few more raised beds or like, and slowly I've been like moving in on all the grass. And my partner, he really loves to mow. Like, he loves to grow food, but he also loves to mow the grass. Poor guy. I keep like, when he comes home, I have like a new, like big, like patch of cardboard over the grass. Like, what's that? I'm like, we're making a new bed. And he goes and plants some grass seed in another area to kind of take back some grass. And
well, but just to sort of step back a second too, is, you know, like one of the things that John and I love to do with the show is talk to people that are, you know, have sort of roots set up in the Valley, but also people that are doing new things. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, you know, that's why it all sort of came together for me, where I was like, oh my God, I need to have Tony on the show. Because I think that that's just it. You're talking about whether you don't know if you're somewhere between a gardener and a farmer, and you're using your property to sort of supplement your income. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is, I think that you're not necessarily the front runner, but you're part of what is about to happen next in food. And we'll see there'll be a lot of other people like you shortly that follow suit, that have learned that they can, you know, as we sort of focus more towards our own backyard to provide food, that, you know, those people, they'll come to that next logical conclusion as well. Like, hey, with this abundance, I can share.
Yeah, because I imagine it's hard to like for small farmers to remain small farmers.
Right.
Like, so like that's, you get to that kind of tipping point where it's like, oh my God, like how can I possibly, you know, there's this demand, but I'm only one person. And when you're doing something at a sustainable level with like not a lot of machinery or just, you know, and there are a lot of farms in this valley where there's just, you know, just people in fields. That's what's going on. Really intense, strong people in fields. And I think, and not that everyone's going to have like a little backyard scene going on, but I think that for me, like the quality of that and the practice of that, and it is a practice, I think it was like a mindfulness practice, is that it's about food security.
Right.
And just knowing the empowerment and knowing how to grow my own food.
Right.
And, that it's not that hard,
yeah.
but it takes time to kind of to tweak it and to know that I'm also supported by people who will, you know, who aren't there, who are too busy to do that, because it takes time and energy, right? Like it takes a lot of time and energy.
This guy right across from me.
The time and energy piece is missing, not the enthusiasm.
I try all the time I got garden. If you want to come over and do some gardening.
I think actually I was talking.
I could probably get a side gig going.
I've brought up this point a couple of times. We were talking to Chef Aaron from White Whale it was quite a while ago. And he was just talking about how when he moved here from Victoria, how there was about 40 or 50 farms, maybe 60 farms, and there was like 450 restaurants vying for that produce.
Right.
And here, it's the role reversal. Here we have about 40 or 50 restaurants, and we have 450 food producers in town.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that. That's
amazing, right? Yeah. There's that many.
Yeah, talk about abundance.
Yeah, but I thought, wow, that's a really saturated market, and it must be really competitive. And this, again, this was about 6 months ago, 8 months ago that we had that conversation. And so I've slowly been sort of trying to find that, where is that competition? Mm-hmm. And I find there isn't, there's nothing but support for one another.
Yeah.
And everybody wants everybody to succeed and everybody wants to help each other. And I realize the fallout isn't a competitive market. It's, we're breeding more people that are becoming experts in that area because there's so much knowledge here and everybody's willing to share.
I think the demand is growing too, as it becomes more accessible or people recognize how accessible it is and how much more delicious, just on a really basic human level in terms of like pleasure. I mean, a carrot out of the earth, there's nothing better than that.
Oh, I know. It completely tastes different completely than, say,
and I think honestly, more than like, you know, generating revenue for myself or even like the pure beauty of having a garden, I love seeing kids eat out of my garden. That is like, that is like the best thing ever. This this last week I had, when I had my friends come and pick up their produce, their little daughter, she was starving and I was like, oh, I don't really know if there's anything in this basket that's really going to, you know, there was no raspberries or anything.
Yeah.
But I had some snap peas and some broccoli and I'd made this basil vinaigrette. Like, her parents did not get any of that. And she just sat there and gobbled it all down. And she was like, that was the best ever. And I was like, oh, like, that is why.
So satisfying,
That is because I feel like, you know, there has been this big disconnect. And in my generation, I think in a lot of the generations, but I'm hoping that in this next generation that there's this like resurgence. And I'm really hopeful of this because I have a baby inside of me right now, that there'll be this like resurgence in this kind of backyard activism in terms of just like feeding our families good food that we know is good, because it's hard to know if food is good,
right?
Quote unquote good. We're told it's good.
Right.
We're told it's this or that, but it's not clear.
Well, no, talking about tipping points, I think that that's where we're at, you know?
It's scary.
Like, right? I think that we've just come to realize that by and large, you know, mass-produced food, it's not as healthy for us as what we can do in our backyard.
And we don't know what's in it. It's not labeled to the standard it maybe should
there's
be.
There's this really big emphasis right now on, like, food, you know, food safety. And I wish I had more of the details on this, but I just read this article, this couple, they've done a couple biographies and written a couple books, but they're talking about, like, food waste. Mm-hmm. And there's this kind of myth in our culture about, in that kind of, I guess, in the industrialized food culture that we've been sold, that there's not enough food.
Right.
But in fact, I think it's something astounding. It's like we waste half of the food.
Yeah.
That is, it's just out of our fridge or in restaurants or wherever, or just businesses that aren't allowed to sell it because it's a day old, so they throw it in the dumpster and they're actually not allowed to feed it.
Right.
And so this is happening in Europe right now, where they're saying it's actually illegal now for grocery stores to just throw out perfectly good food, that they have to find other homes for, like food banks and these sorts of things. And I think that it's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous myth that we've been sold.
Yeah, I agree. I think the food industry has been overregulated to the point where the people that are regulating the food have such a disconnect. They don't understand what they're regulating anymore, and they don't realize that a lot of the things that they're saying we can't do because it might be unsafe. The mass-produced food has just as much of a risk factor.
Yeah.
It's also just as unsafe. It's just long-term.
I just listened to this podcast, and it was about...
another podcast? Not ours?
I listened to a few podcasts out there.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. They were talking about bagged lettuce.
Yeah.
You know how we all buy bagged lettuce now. Well, they were taking it directly to the dump, fresh lettuce, and dumping it because the expiry dates were too far along. And it's all biodegradable, but it's in plastic bags, so it can't be compost, so it's garbage. But it's all perfectly good.
Right.
And it's the situation is that by the time it gets to the store, it's going to be rotten. So they're not going to risk that whole process of taking it out there.
It's like and the you saddest just, story.
And it's
it
just,
is.
It's really sad to think that, yes, people are getting into buying more vegetables and getting this.
Yeah.
Healthy,
and
fresh
yet people
lettuce.
People are starving.
Yes,
they're hungry.
Yeah. And they're just dumping this stuff.
And they need nutritious food.
Yeah,
yeah.
And we're doing so.
Yeah,
even just eliminating that piece of like packaging even feels good. Like to just like throw something in a basket.
Yeah.
And give it to someone. And be like, quickly go home and put this in your fridge, and just taking out that middle piece, even on such a small scale. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, because it's hard to know what to do. It's hard to know how to be an active citizen in terms of, you know, being politically active. I get like all busy in my head about it, but I feel like this is like one thing I can do is like get my hands in the earth and be on the ground and send a couple texts out and feed a couple families, you know, for a week. And that is profound.
I'll never forget... as I've mentioned before on the show, I have a sushi cart, and I'll forget my first
sushi cart.
my first event. I was at the Philberg Festival, and I wanted to be conscious of what I was doing. I wanted to make sure that I wasn't becoming just another person, another cog in the machine that was being destructive and completely unaware of what I was doing. And so I said, well, I'm going to separate things into what's compostable, what's recyclable, what's garbage. And, you know, funny enough, as I arrived there, they had a similar system, but maybe not as in depth. But I was like, okay, well, now what do I do now that I have, like, actually all the waste, the food waste separated? And I mentioned it to you, and you're like, oh, well, I live on a duck farm, and the ducks would love it. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, it was just so fantastic to me that I didn't have to waste a single thing as far as the food.
Oh, those ducks were delicious.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, as I move forward, I'm about to embark on a new food adventure in a new food career at the end of the summer. And I'm taking that with me, that's a very important thing to move forward into, that is that being aware of not just, say, necessarily the marketing side or the retail side, which is something I feel very comfortable with, but also the impact and being a part of the community instead of just trying to peddle my wares in the community, also being a positive force in the community.
Yeah. Well, I think that footprint gets overlooked a lot of the time. Yeah. We get most of our produce comes from California. And as we all know, there's like not a lot of water in California. We don't have a lot of water here right now, which is rare.
Yeah.
So it's becoming a really scary kind of an issue. And I feel like even the last couple of days, we've had this like kind of smoky haze in the sky. And I kind of got into that like apocalyptic state. Talk myself down. But, you know, it's like all of these things are like really important things to think about, because as our climate changes, we don't need to rely on California as much to grow a lot of the crops that we have before. And I mean, I've heard rumors of many things in the Valley of people growing lemons and oranges and peaches and apricots. I know these things are happening in secret greenhouses all over the valley.
Next year, we're going to try growing things that are traditionally grown further south to see if it works.
Get an avocado grove over here.
Our climate's changing, and let's test, see what we can do. Maybe we don't have to have any reliance outside of the valley at all.
Yeah, well, if I don't get to snowboard anymore, I'm definitely going to have like an olive grove or something to kind of satiate my energy. But
Yeah, it's
all very important.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we could talk about this forever. I know I could, but I think that this is probably where we should leave the first of these conversations, maybe. I think we've covered the most of it, or most of the important, but we can go into depth on a later show, maybe. Unless there's something that you wanted to add? Any final thoughts?
Well, I would just like to thank Tony for coming in and chatting with us today.
Thanks. It was great. I feel honored to be included in your little food echelon. I don't fit so neatly into it, I know.
No, but I know, and that's just it. But that's exactly why you need to be here, because food doesn't have to fit in neat little categories, you know? Yeah.
But you should do a little shout out about your yoga studio and all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I co-own a studio with my friend Kristen Gilbert in the Comox Valley called The Dog House, which is on our property in Courtney. And we teach yoga out of there mostly, but we do have a large emphasis on food as well. So I've traditionally done retreats in the summer, and Kristen does kind of a bi-yearly Ayurvedic cooking class in the space as well. And then we've often... with lots of workshops and things, we also do catering. So we like to combine food into the yoga lifestyle kind of realm, but also as a way to promote community. And I think your last guest, he was saying, you know, there's nothing more potent than people sitting around and sharing food together. And I think that when we're talking about community, that is, for me, like food is my most disciplined practice. Like I'm a yogi, but I don't practice yoga every day. Mm-hmm. Like I don't get on my mat every day, but I definitely eat every day.
Yeah.
And, so I think if we can approach, food from that kind of mindful place, you know, where we're trying to tread as lightly as possible and to put as much care in as possible, to what we're putting in our bodies, then, you know, I think that we're practicing yoga too. So we like to kind of weave that in a little bit. Chris and I are both foodies. So
yeah.
anytime that we can kind of bring food into it, it's really
that
important.
That whole piece of property, you know, the gorgeous yeah. garden, which, you know, the yoga studio looks over onto, and this beautiful, like, 20-foot vaulted ceiling, all wood, yoga studio yeah, set around a fireplace and a kitchen.
It's kind of a secret location. Once you get there one time, you're good.
It's but absolutely like you go in there and it's like this little piece of heaven. It's
I
perfect.
I love seeing people's faces when they walk in the door for the first time. They're like, whoa. Cause it's a kind of like little, you know, just, it yeah. doesn't really look like much from the outside. And you open the door and it's like 14-foot ceilings. Yeah. And these yeah. big windows. Wood stove and
yeah, people assume it's like this yeah. sort of backwards converted yeah. garage from the outside, but you go inside yeah. and you're like, oh my god, this is yeah. amazing, mm-hmm. this is perfect. Yeah.
I so. Tell people, I'm like, I'm not hurt if you just come for the wood stove. Like yeah. in the wintertime, I'm like, I don't take it personally, and yeah. you know, but we have a really loyal community as well that shows up. Like we have really regular students, even though we've only been running the student or the studio for about 2 years.
Yeah,
we don't actually have a website. But we're on Facebook.
Right.
It's called, I think it's just called the Doghouse Courtney.
Okay.
If you put in the Doghouse, you'll find it. This, I think it's the only the Doghouse yoga studio.
Right.
And, I have a blog, which I have, many things on mm-hmm. yoga and food related. I'm pretty bad about updating it, but maybe now that I'm saying this into a microphone, I might feel motivated to do it. And it's, www.yogatony.com. Great. So you can find out any, it'll link you up to the Doghouse on that page and,
perfect.
Yeah. Thanks. All right. Other questions, let me know.
Okay. Well, whether you are committed or not, we're going to have you back on the show in a few months.
Super committed. I love talking.
All right. Great. Okay. So we'll leave it till then.
All right. Thanks, well, guys. Thank you for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast.